Welcome to Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today is Friday the 12th of June, and once again the calendar's zoomed round to the Green Team's turn to read to you. I hope we find you well and in good spirits, and ready to hear what the local papers have to say this week. My name is Gwen Whedon, and today I'm joined by Chris and Lynn. So let's not waste any more time, let's meet them.
Hello, it's Chris here. And I've got the Tynmouth Post front page. Limmer introduce myself. Rare births boost conservation. Spring is in the air at Sheldon Wildlife Trust, which is celebrating an extraordinary baby boom following the birth of four critically endangered red ruffed lemurs. The quadruplets born on May the 4th to Mother Eka and Father Nero represent a significant milestone for the small charity and for the European breeding programme. While twins are common for this species, quadruplets are incredibly rare, occurring in fewer than 6% of births worldwide. Despite being one of the UK's smaller wildlife charities, Sheldon is known for punching well above its weight on the international stage. These newborns are part of the European Association of Zoos and Aquariums breeding programme, a vital Europe-wide effort to ensure the survival of red-ruffed lemurs, which are only found in a small area in the northeast of Madagascar. Alongside being part of a breeding programme, Sheldon Wildlife Trust directly supports the protection of these animals in the wild through their field conservation partner, the Lemur Conservation Association. The news comes on the heels of the Trust being featured in National Geographic as one of the top zoos globally dedicated to conservation, further cementing the small zoo's role in global wildlife preservation. The four youngsters are already keeping Mum Eka very busy. Visitors to the Trust may soon be able to catch a glimpse of the youngsters as they have become more active in their habitat. Zach Scholl, director of Sheldon Wildlife Trust, said, "To have four healthy infants at once is a real testament to the care our team provides. We've had a lot of excitement recently with the National Geographic coverage, but there is nothing quite like the arrival of quads to remind us why we do what we do. It's a huge win for the species and a proud moment for Sheldon." And there's a photograph of the four animals with the biggest eyes you've ever seen.
Hello, I'm Lynn, and I've got the Dawlish Gazette headline, Community Group to Protect Green Space. A much-loved area of public green space in Dawlish could be taken over by a community group. The New Hay, next to St Gregory's Church, is glebe land belonging to the Diocese of Exeter. But its future is in doubt after Teignbridge Council failed to renew its lease on the site. Campaigners say the 4 acres of land, which has historically been used as an informal recreation open space, is rich in wildlife and accessible for old people and those with disabilities. Town councillors in Dawlish have been looking into ways the land could be protected. A special task and finish group will set up and is presenting its findings. A report to councillors said the New Hay Task and Finish Group recognises the considerable community value and historic importance of the New Hay area. However, following extensive due diligence, investigations, independent professional advice and detailed consideration of the operational, financial, legal and liability implications, the group concluded that it would not be in the best interests of the town council or a local council taxpayers to take on the responsibility for the site. But councillors have agreed to strongly support the principle of a properly constituted community group taking on the future management of the New Hay site. This would then continue the benefit to the local community. The council said representatives of the diocese have advised the future of the New Hay will be considered at a diocese meeting later this month. The report continued, the group also recognised an independent community organisation would be significantly better placed than the Town Council to access and secure a wider range of external grant funding opportunities, charitable funding streams and environmental funding community asset grants, volunteer-led support schemes that are not always available to the local authorities. After the meeting, the campaigner, Betsy Binion, said there had been a good turnout with lots of members of the public who spoke passionately about the new hay and what it meant to them. She said people are keen to move forward with a community group running the new hay. But this would, the annual rent of about £2,000 and the arrangement would be on a full repair and insecure basis with all maintenance liability and operational responsibilities transferring. The Town Council has pledged to agree to support a suitable community proposal, but as a facilitator rather than as a land manager.
Couple complete Tough Danube kayak for charity. A couple have completed a marathon kayak trip to raise money to help Dawlish residents. Mark Jones, leader of the Hope Church, and his wife Jo have made it to the end of their 200-mile kayak ride along the Danube River. They have raised almost half of their £2,000 target. The couple, who are both in their 50s, have funded the trip themselves, so all money raised will be going to the Hope charity, which runs Dawlish Community Larder and works with local schools and provides family mentoring. The 9-day trip began west of Vienna and ended in Budapest. At the finish, Joe said, "We made it, final destination Budapest, with zero capsizes, one amazing time, many lessons learned, and a few hairy, scary moments. We are leaner, fitter, healthier, and ready for some dry land days." Along the way, there were eventful and challenging days. They encountered high winds and backwash from high-speed ferries, which almost capsized them at one point near the Slovak border. They had to navigate narrow passing places between shore and massive ships with them in the eddies in between. In Hungary, days were long and tough with big water but little flow. Even a thunderstorm failed to stop their journey. In Slovakia, they faced travelling through a very narrow shipping lane with huge, deep and heavy barges which produced a large wake, and stone groins in the middle of the river meant the pair were pushed into the shipping lane. However, Joe added, most of the way we were covered in beautiful tree blossom that feels and looks like soft cotton. The couple are now heading home to recover.
Hospital's 14.2 emergency revamp. The final phase of the redevelopment of Torbay Hospital's emergency department has been officially opened. Lord Lieutenant of Devon, David Furdish, carried out the ribbon cutting to mark the completion of the 14.2 million transformation. The project has been delivered in planned phases to make sure emergency care could continue throughout the build. The milestone marks the completion of Phase 3 and the full handover of the modernised department, providing improved facilities for both patients and staff. The newly completed emergency department offers better patient flow, privacy and dignity, with expanded clinical areas and enhanced spaces to support the assessment and treatment for urgent and emergency care. Dedicated zones for different patients' needs, alongside upgraded equipment and improved staff facilities, are helping to create a safer and more efficient and more compassionate environment for care. Dr. Kate Lissett, Chief Medical Officer at Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust, said, "This is a hugely important moment for our organisation and the communities that we serve. Our emergency department team delivers exceptional care every day, often under significant pressure, and this investment gives them a modern environment that truly supports high quality care. For patients, the new department means faster assessment and a more dignified experience at what can often be a stressful time. We're incredibly proud to have reached this stage. Amy Jones, emergency medical consultant, said, "The new environment is already making a real difference. The layout supports us in assessing and treating patients more quickly, and the dedicated areas mean we can provide more personalised care for patients, and it's also a much better place to work."
Farm invites the public to join the 50th celebrations. Shallowford Farm on Dartmoor is inviting the public to a free community fete this summer to mark its 50th anniversary. The celebration will take place on Saturday, July the 18th, when the farm will open its gates for a day of family-friendly activities and entertainment. Visitors can expect farm animals, nature-based activities, Morris dancing, storytelling, games and food stalls, all set within the scenic surroundings of Dartmoor National Park. The event is open to everyone, whether they've been previously involved with Shallowford Farm or are discovering it for the first time. Although entry is free, tickets must be booked in advance, with the organisers warning that availability is limited. Shallowford Farm provides educational experiences for young people. Tickets, which are free, are available via the Shallowford Farm's website.
Theatre Group Triumph at Southwest Awards. Time to give a round of applause to three local theatre groups which have all won regional awards for their productions. Sheldon Theatre Company, Newton Abbott Musical Comedy Society and Dawlish Musical Theatre Company all triumphed in the annual NODA, or National Operatic and Dramatic Association, Southwest Awards, celebrating the best in amateur theatre. Dawlish Musical Theatre Company won Best Youth Production for Aladdin Junior, performed by its youth members. Musical director Joanna Walling said, "We're so thrilled with the award and very, very proud of our youngsters. The production was made up of young people from in and around Dawlish, and the shows took place at the Shaftesbury Theatre in Dawlish. It takes a huge team to put on a show like this. Everything from costumes and lighting to chaperones and props, and so a lot of work goes into it, and that is before the young people are even auditioned. From start to finish, the young cast were professional, and they loved working on this Disney production. As part of the performing rights, no adult could be on view, and so the young cast had to also move the set on stage, as adult stagehands were not allowed. Dawlish Musical Theatre Company have only just started putting on youth productions and have started giving workshops to the local young community too, so we are thrilled at receiving this award." Newton Abbott and District Musical Comedy Society production of Anything Goes won the NODA Southwest Award for Best Company Musical and Dance. A spokesperson said, "This is an incredible achievement and a wonderful recognition for our society. Huge congratulations to our amazing cast and production team for all their hard work, dedication and talent. A very special mention goes to our choreographer, Sarah Roche, whose incredible vision and creativity brought the company movement and dance to life so brilliantly on stage." Sheldon Theatre Company won the June Barker Memorial Cup for the best large pantomime, an impressive achievement for such a small group. The show, Once Upon a Time in Pantoland, has also been nominated for the Stage Electrics Technical Achievement Award, and it was a landmark production, being the company's 40th pantomime, and was specially written by committee member Sean Gawley. A spokesperson said, "They were beyond thrilled to have won the Best Large Panto Prize. They said, 'We honestly don't have the words to express how grateful we are to everyone involved in the production and to all of you who continue to support us as a theatre company. Your support means everything to us, and we're so proud to continue bringing theatre to more people in our community.'" And there's a lovely photo of the Dawlish Musical Theatre's Joanne Walling, music director, Hannah Critch, director, and Joe McKenzie, the assistant musical director, with their award, which is a lovely trophy, and certificates.
Inspection praise welcomed by police. Devon and Cornwall Police have welcomed the findings of a new inspection report which recognises significant improvements in key areas of performance, while highlighting further work needed to improve outcomes for victims of crime. The latest Peel Police Effectiveness, Efficiency and Legitimacy inspection by His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services, carried out in January, acknowledges the force's progress in several areas and confirms it has now been fully removed from the enhanced monitoring process that it had been subject to in recent years. The report highlights improvements in contact services, including the handling of 999 and 101 calls, as well as the management of sex offenders and dangerous offenders. Inspectors also recognised advances in financial management, control room performance and crime prevention work. Inspectors found that Devon and Cornwall Police continues to prevent and deter crime and antisocial behaviour effectively, with early intervention schemes and partnership initiatives delivering benefits for local communities. However, the report also identified two areas requiring further attention: crime investigations and the safeguarding of vulnerable people. Inspectors noted inconsistencies in domestic abuse risk assessments and said more work was needed to improve outcomes for victims. The report also highlighted the need for improvements in crime recording practices and the monitoring of preventative orders. Chief Constable James Vaughan said he welcomed the findings and recognised both the progress made and the challenges that remain. Keeping people safe from harm and providing the best quality service to the public remains at the heart of everything we do, he said. Whilst we have delivered sustained improvements since 2022 and the force has now been fully removed from enhanced monitoring, there remains more to do to improve outcomes for victims and ensure consistent safeguarding standards.
New cafe will be a sign of the times. A remarkable young man about to launch what is thought to be the first community facility of its kind in the Teignbridge area. The new monthly Deaf Cafe in Bovey Tracy is set to offer a social setting for people with hearing loss and enable others to learn British Sign Language. The project is the brainchild of 23-year-old Chudley Knighton businessman Bradley Oliver, and it is thought to be the first of its kind covering both Teignbridge and much of Dartmoor. The idea came to him when he was running the fortnightly Maker's Gift Market at Bovey Tracy Riverside Community Centre. He tried to talk with a girl interested in his laser crafts, but her parents said she was deaf and only knew sign language. That was enough for Bradley and his mum, Katrina, who's also involved in the business to pay for their own signing lessons. And now they want to share the joy that their new skill has brought. We have disabilities in our own family and we know how important it is that everyone is included, said Bradley. There are five houses in Bovey Tracy that are run by the Deaf UK and they bring people here for holidays. We can go round the stalls and interpret the best we can to let them know the price of objects or help them express their thoughts. And the new Deaf Cafe is set to launch with a trial on Friday the 3rd of July and will take place from 1:30 to 3:30 on the first Friday of every month from September. People can come and learn fingerspelling and other basics, but it's also for the deaf people to come and be able to chat with others in their community, said Bradley. We're starting to spread the word and quite a few people are already interested. We're just asking for a £2 donation to cover costs and hope it will go from strength to strength. The scheme has won the backing of Central Devon MP and Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride MP, who said this is a great initiative on the part of Bradley, who is once again showing how local action can help in a way that assists not just those who are deaf or hearing impaired, but the wider community too. I look forward to the prospect of visiting the Deaf Cafe in the future and seeing this great initiative in action.
Will Town's big wheel come round again? What goes round comes around, according to the saying, but it's too soon to say whether Teignmouth's big wheel will be coming to the seafront again. The 36-metre high observation wheel was installed at the end of April and stayed for the whole of the month of May. Teignbridge District Council, which hired the wheel, said it was very well received, with excellent feedback from residents and visitors. But the council has stopped short of confirming whether the wheel will roll into town once again. A spokesman said, "The Teignbridge is always keen to explore new ways to make the district an even more attractive place to live, work and visit. We will continue to consider opportunities that support our towns and communities."
Shagford to host event to celebrate National Park's 75th birthday. Shagford's Jubilee Hall will host a major free public celebration of Dartmoor's history on July the 4th to mark the 75th anniversary of Dartmoor's designation as one of Britain's first national parks. Organised by the Shagford Local History Society, Dartmoor History Day will run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and will feature a range of activities, including historical displays curated by local history organisations, a special exhibition from the Devon History Society highlighting everyday life in 1920s Devon, and a unique display from the Shagford Heritage Centre. The event will also feature live performances of traditional Dartmoor songs and stories, and organisers will also invite local residents to share memories of life on Dartmoor in decades past, helping preserve personal stories and experiences for future generations.
Hartridge seals Devon return with Argyle switch. Plymouth Argyle have made their first signing of the close season, securing defender Alex Hartridge on a permanent deal. The 27-year-old will officially become a Pilgrim on July the 1st, joining the following of the expiry of his contract at Burton Albion, and he has agreed a 2-year deal at Home Park. Primarily a central defender, Hartridge is also capable of operating at left back, bringing valuable versatility to the squad. His career began at Exeter City, where he progressed through the academy system and gained experience via loan spells at Truro City and Bath City before establishing himself in the first team during the 2021 season. Raised in Totnes, he went on to make more than 150 appearances for the Grecians before departing for Wycombe Wanderers in the summer of 2024. His time there included 14 appearances, largely in cup competitions, as well as a loan return to St James's Park, where he featured regularly once again. Hartridge then joined Burton Albion last summer on a 1-year deal, going on to make 42 appearances in all competitions, scoring 3 goals. Head coach Tom Cleverley said, "I'm really pleased to make Alex our first signing of the summer. He had a good season for Burton Albion and can strengthen us in more than one position." Meanwhile, Connor Hazard's 3-year spell at Argyle has come to an end after he agreed a move to Wycombe Wanderers, also in League One.
Climate emergency film explains change. The People's Emergency Briefing, a film to inform the public about the true scale of the climate emergency, will be screened in Bishop Stainton on Saturday, June the 20th. The 50-minute film, presented by naturalist and broadcaster Chris Packham, explains the likely effects of accelerated climate change and nature loss on Britain. Floods, fires, heat waves, food and energy insecurity, and economic stability. It aims to cut through disinformation and rally public backing for government action by presenting expert evidence from climate scientists and experts in the field of economics, health, food supply and national security. Following the national briefing in November last year, the film is being shown at community venues around the UK. The free Bishop Stainton screening, organised by the Parish Council, will be at the Community Centre in Shute Hill at 7 p.m. The film will be followed by a discussion on what steps local people and organisations can take, both to increase resilience and to demand an appropriate response to the emergency from the government.
Well, just one obituary from our area today, and that's for Mr. Christopher Keane, who passed away on the 17th of May, aged 82 years. The funeral service is at the Devon and Exeter Crematorium St Paul's Chapel on Thursday the 19th of June at 2 p.m. And further details available from Oliver J. Knapman Funeral Service in Tynmouth. Moving on to events, first of all, we've got a quick reminder of what you have already been told for next week. So Tuesday the 16th of June, Dawlish Community Transport is going to Exmouth. Also on Tuesday, Sheldon and Ringmore WI meet in Sheldon. And on Wednesday the 17th, the Here and Now AGM is on Wednesday, and everybody is welcome. Also Wednesday, All Saints Church Kenton has a coffee and chat morning. And on Saturday, there is a murder mystery event at the Strand Centre, Dawlish. And then moving on to the following week, Tuesday the 23rd of June, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Tavistock. The cost is £22. Then from Wednesday the 24th until Saturday the 27th, the Sheldon Theatre Company are performing Disco Inferno at the Pavilions in Tynmouth. On Wednesday the 24th, Dawlish Community Transport have their AGM at 7 p.m. at the Hope Centre, Swift Road, Dawlish. Sheldon and Ringmore Village Hall have their AGM, 7:30 p.m. at the Hub. Then Thursday the 25th, Dawlish Garden Society meet at 7 p.m. for a talk on Gertrude Jekyll by David Usher. Sunday the 28th, Kenton Concerts Formula 5 presents Colours of Sound, an eclectic mix of music. I'm told this will now be held at St Gregory's Church in Dawlish at 4 p.m. I wasn't told where it was formerly going to be held. In addition to those, I would like to say, if you could all please return your USB sticks and wallets, it would be really helpful to us. This week in particular, we had very, very few returned, and it does make things difficult when it comes to sending them all out again.
Musical good vibes for Dartmoor villagers. A feel-good music video has been filmed in the Dartmoor village of Scorriton, featuring residents enjoying simple pleasures and companionship in the sunny Devon countryside. The Good Life is the latest single from Good Vibes Rollercoaster, who describe themselves as a British indie rock collective, blending 1970s-inspired sounds with modern festival-ready energy, focused on motivational, feel-good, story-driven songs built for live crowds. The video captures Scorriton's rural scenery and shows residents leading cows down a country lane, enjoying drinks together in a pub's beer garden, and playing on space hoppers. The Good Vibes Rollercoaster is led by songwriter-producer Matt Walton, who's originally from Torquay, and who fronted the 1990s band Mad Hatter. He appears in the video with guitarist Paul Downs, and the pair hitch a ride on a tractor trailer and join the villagers in a friendly tug-of-war competition. The video can be seen on YouTube, and the single is available on Spotify, Apple Music and Amazon Music.
Council leader pushes for water industry reform. The leader of Devon County Council has said that the privatised water industry is not fit for purpose, that it's broken and that the public are suffering as a result of it. Councillor Julian Brazil is calling for government to look at whether nationalisation of the water industry, or maybe creating a not-for-profit arm's-length business to run the industry for the public good, are the solutions to bring much-needed investment and improvement to the country's water supply. His comments come as South West Water were in court in Exeter for sentencing following the company's admission to supplying water unfit for human consumption following the Cryptosporidium outbreak in Brixham in 2024. Councillor Brazil said, "This is symptomatic of the failure, not just of South West Water, but water companies across the country, to invest in the infrastructure that would take us into the 21st century. Obviously, we have the human tragedy, or it could have been, in Brixham. But this is also about the raw sewage that runs into our waterways and that pollutes our swimming areas. We are a tourist and leisure county, and we absolutely need to be able to hold these water companies to account. They are costing the local economy. They're costing individual businesses money, and yet there seems to be no accountability. Firstly, what we need is to make sure that there is executive responsibility. Secondly, it's quite clear that the privatised water industry, as it is not fit for purpose. So we need to look at that and whether that means nationalising it again or whether to create arm's length businesses that are run purely for public good and not for private profit. I don't know the answer, but what I do know is that the system as it is at the moment is broken and we are all suffering as a result of it.
Could your garden reveal a hidden history? Residents across Teignbridge and South Devon are being invited to take part in a new community archaeology project that could help uncover hidden layers of local history, right in their own gardens. The Teignbridge Archaeological Society has launched the Teignbridge Gardens Project, a volunteer-led initiative seeking homeowners willing to host a small archaeological test pit in their outdoor spaces. A test pit is a carefully excavated square, typically measuring 1 metre by 1 metre, that allows archaeologists and volunteers to explore soil layers and uncover artefacts that reveal how land has been used over time. Finds can include pottery fragments, clay pipes, building materials, and other historical objects, with even small discoveries helping to build a wider picture of the history of local villages and communities across the district. Organisers say the project aims not only to deepen understanding of Teignbridge's past, but also to give residents the chance to take part in hands-on archaeology. The initiative is open to people of all experience levels with no archaeological training required. Volunteers will be guided through the excavation process and supported in learning practical skills, making the project accessible to those with a general interest in history as well as more experienced enthusiasts. The Teignbridge Archaeological Society say community participation is central to the scheme, with the potential for each garden site to contribute valuable information about settlement patterns and everyday life in the region through the centuries. For those interested in volunteering or offering their garden for a test pit, please contact the Society's secretary, Joan Alban, and information can be found on their website.
Family embark on 25-kilometre awareness walk. A family is gearing up for an ultra-challenge walk in memory of a much-loved wife, grandmother and friend. Jane Farrell from Ogwell died in 2024 of pulmonary fibrosis, a terminal lung cancer disease which affects 150,000 people in the UK and has an average survival rate of 3 to 5 years. There's currently no cure for the disease, but treatments can slow the rate of deterioration and manage the symptoms. Jane was diagnosed in early 2023, and despite the condition, she responded with determination, optimism, and a desire to help others. Husband Peter said, following her diagnosis, she did all she could to foster awareness about the disease, despite her deteriorating health. She volunteered for drug trials and started a support group for local patients with help from Torbay Hospital. It is a more common and more deadly disease than many cancers, but most people have never even heard of it. Jane became an active supporter for Action for Pulmonary Fibrosis, or APF, and continued tirelessly until her death in late 2024. Now Peter continues to run the group, which provides support, information and companionship for families facing this devastating illness. On July the 18th, Peter will join members of his family and loved ones of other local patients to walk 25 kilometres on the Gower, where he and Jane first met more than 50 years ago. Their aim is not only to raise funds, but also to increase awareness of pulmonary fibrosis and the importance of an early diagnosis. Money raised will support costs of the bi-monthly meetings of the local Torbay support group and also the charity APF, which supports research, awareness, campaigns, patient services and national advocacy. To sponsor the walk, learn more or support the local Torbay group, contact Peter using this email address, PETANE or PETANE at outlook.com.
And I have another football story. Devon FA wins award for 130 years of service. Devon County Football Association has won the top prize at the Devon Business Awards, being recognised with the Devon Legacy Award for more than 130 years of service to football. Hosted by Devon Chamber of Commerce, the Devon Business Awards celebrated the very best of business in the county, from new start-up businesses to innovation in inclusivity, with the Devon Legacy Award the final award of the evening. The Devon Legacy Award is a special honour for individuals or organisations with long-standing contributions to Devon's business community. With over 130 years of service to the grassroots game in the county, Newton Abbott-based Devon County Football Association was formed in 1888 at a meeting held in the pavilion of Plymouth Cricket Club, South Devon Place, with Newton, Plymouth FC and Tavistock Grammar School among the founding clubs. In 1889, the first Challenge Cup was inaugurated, with Tavistock Town defeating Plymouth FC in the final. Fast forward 137 years, there are now 26 County Cup finals, from youth and girls football all the way through to five Disability Cup finals, ensuring everyone has the opportunity to experience the game in the same way. Having started with an initial 8 clubs, there are now more than 600, providing tens of thousands of players the chance to enjoy the beautiful game. And there is a pathway for everyone to participate. Football in Devon is thriving, they said. We can't wait to see where the next 138 years goes.
Devon begins rollout of the new EHCP framework. Devon County Council has begun the phased implementation of the new Education, Health and Care Plan, or EHCP, funding framework designed to make decisions on special educational needs, making the funding clearer, fairer and more consistent. The framework, which has now received formal approval through the county's SEND governance process, has been developed through extensive collaboration with schools, parents, carers and council colleagues. Its aim is to improve the way top-up funding is allocated to mainstream schools by linking financial support more closely to a child or a young person's overall profile of need rather than relying solely on existing funding arrangements. The new approach will initially apply to children and young people undergoing new education, health and care need assessments, where the decision to assess was made on or after May 1, 2026. It will also apply to pupils moving into a new phase of education in September 2027, whose EHCPs are reviewed as part of this phase transfer process. Council officials have stressed that there will be no immediate changes for children and young people who already have EHCP and receive top-up funding. The schools supporting these pupils will continue to receive their current funding levels while the framework is introduced gradually. And the framework is expected to begin influencing funding decisions from mid to late June 2026 as plans progress through the statutory assessment process. As the rollout continues, Devon County Council says it will work closely with schools, families and partner organisations to build understanding of the new system, gather the feedback and ensure the changes are implemented in a measured and supported way. There are further details on the EHCP through, and this would be available through Devon's SEND local officer.
Float to live advice issued after call-outs. Dawlish Coast Guard has issued a reminder about water safety following two recent incidents along the South Devon coast. The team was called to Dawlish Warren just before 8 p.m. on May the 29th, following reports of a person in difficulty in the water. On arrival, the casualty had managed to get out of the water safely. Coast Guard volunteers provided safety advice and information on symptoms to watch for in case water had been inhaled or swallowed. On June the 4th, the team were tasked to assist two people cut off by the tide at Limpston. However, volunteers were stood down after the incident was resolved. With summer now underway, the Coast Guard is urging people to swim at lifeguarded beaches, carry a means of communication, and remember to float to live if they get into difficulties in the water.
So the next article, should we feed garden birds? There has recently been a considerable number of discussions concerning the feeding of garden birds. Some wildlife organisations have recommended totally stopping supplementary feeding, and most bird food suppliers understandably suggest that garden birds' feeding is beneficial throughout the year. Actual figures are hard to interpret, with some studies showing an increased survival of over 50% among juvenile birds where feeding occurs, with numbers of adult goldfinches and great spotted woodpeckers showing a substantial increase as well. We're experiencing a considerable decrease in natural bird foods such as insects, particularly caterpillars, with many of them tending to appear earlier. So bird breeding times are no longer synchronized with the peak food output. Loss of habitat due to the paving over of gardens is also a potential problem. Therefore, it is argued feeding with suitable bird food throughout the year has become more important. Some organisations suggest that feeding attracts unnatural numbers of birds to an area. However, having a variety of watchable birds in your garden is a particularly English activity, which is claimed to be good for personal well-being. Avian flu has received a lot of publicity, but it mostly affects poultry and seabirds, including waterfowl, so it's unlikely to be a problem with garden birds. And a single-cell parasite named trichomosis can be deadly, particularly with greenfinches, where it causes them to become lethargic and not fly, even when you closely approach them. However, it has also been found at location where no feeding occurs, and greenfinch numbers are increasing. Salmonella and E. coli often affect sparrows. Where there is poor hygiene with uneaten mouldy food, it can be spread by other animals too. Recommendations from the bird food suppliers are to continue with bird feeding, but regularly clean and disinfect the feeders, particularly those flat top types, and use a wildlife safe disinfectant and follow instructions. Bread, which has been processed for human consumption, is not a natural bird food and can quickly become mouldy, although gulls seem to thrive on it. Sunflower hearts, which leave little mess behind and are enjoyed by most of our birds, can be a better alternative. And this informative article also includes some lovely photographs of some local visitors to bird feeders that you might enjoy. We've got a black cap in having a bit of a bath. A Cyril bunting, beautiful yellow and brown striped bird, a robin who's perched on a bird feeder, and a blue tit also using a peanut feeder. So very informative.
Elwood Classic set for Dartmoor debut. A national walling competition is set to be held on Dartmoor for the first time this year, bringing together skilled wallers from across the UK for a live showcase of a traditional rural craft. The Elwood Classic Walling Competition will take place on Saturday the 27th of June at Merivale, Princetown. With professional, veteran and amateur competitors building stone structures against the clock, visitors will be able to watch the action unfold, learn about the techniques involved, and even try their hand at walling through hands-on activities and demonstrations. This year's event will present a unique challenge for competitors, as it will focus on the construction of Devon banks rather than traditional dry stone walls. Devon banks feature an earth core with two stone faces bound by soil and vegetation, creating a distinctive sloping structure known as a batter. The event will also include hot food stalls and refreshments provided by Dartmoor Brewery. Families and dogs on leads are welcome to attend, with parking available for £5 per car. The competition is sponsored by the Dartmoor Preservation Association, with support from the Dartmoor Hill Farm Project, the Dartmoor Brewery, and the Dartmoor National Park Authority. The Elwood Classic was first held in Cumbria in 2019 and is named after Ted Elwood, a celebrated competition waller. The event travels annually to different parts of the UK to promote inclusivity and showcase regional walling traditions. Dry stone walling has a long history in Britain, with evidence dating back thousands of years. On Dartmoor, these structures remain an iconic feature of the landscape, traditionally used to define boundaries and manage livestock. For more information and to reserve a space, visit the Eventbrite website and enter Elwood Classic Walling Competition in the search box.
Mare and foal survive against all the odds. The South West's largest horse rescue charity has described the intense pressure on equine welfare services this year after pledging lifelong care to a foal and her severely underweight dam, who was not expected to survive. The Mare and Foal Sanctuary had taken in Mare Thelma and her filly foal Cindy following a multi-agency operation led by the RSPCA and World Horse Welfare. Thelma was found last year extremely underweight and facing significant welfare concerns, including a severe heart murmur. At an RSPCA holding base, she gave birth to Cindy, and for a time, vets believed it was unlikely that Thelma would live. The Mare and Foal Sanctuary prepared to offer a place to Cindy in the belief that she would soon be orphaned. Staff had space ready for her to join the group of Icelandic foals so she could grow up with companions her own age. Experienced grooms and veterinary staff were on standby to give her the specialist round-the-clock care a vulnerable orphaned foal would need. But against expectations, Thelma survived. With very careful refeeding, she slowly gained weight and her condition improved. Her heart rate stabilised and the vet could no longer detect a heart murmur. Thelma's incredible recovery meant that in March this year, both Mare and Foal could be transferred together into the sanctuary's care at the charity's Beech Trees Veterinary and Welfare Assessment Centre in Newton Abbot, where they both began the next phase of their lives. Thelma will receive long-term specialist care with a focus on keeping her life as calm and settled as possible. Cindy will grow up with skilled, consistent handling so she can develop into a confident young horse. Their handler, Jane Proctor, said, "Seeing how far Thelma and Cindy have come makes me so hopeful for what's ahead. They're finally safe, settled and starting to shine again. I just know they're going to blossom even more from here. They both deserve the happiest future."
Rugby veterans complete three peaks for charity. It was a challenge far beyond the rugby pitch when the Tynmouth Rugby Football Club veterans team took on the grueling Three Peaks for charity. The 19 squad members climbed Ben Nevis in Scotland, Scafell Pike in the Lake District and Snowdon in Wales in the space of just 24 hours. They started at 6 a.m. on the Scottish mountain, hiking through snow and ice to reach the summit. They tackled Scafell Pike overnight during thick fog and made it to the top of Snowdon the following day. The challenge has raised £12,000 for their three chosen causes. Cancer Research, Alzheimer's Research UK, and the children's charity of Rugby, the Wooden Spoon. The team have thanked all their sponsors and other supporters, and there's a photograph of them, probably at Scarfell Pike because it's so foggy, but they all look perished and cold.
School Trip explores the world's natural habitats. A trip to the Eden Project took geography pupils from Dunsford Community Academy on a journey around the world natural and their natural habitats. In the project's Crazy Chef Challenge for school groups, they explored the different countries and climates where food is grown and learnt how everyday ingredients are connected to different environments. The challenge presented the children with a recipe for a cake containing plant-based ingredients from all over the world, with their names written in Latin. The pupils worked in teams using a map and information sheets to translate the names and discover the geographical origins of the plants. After tracking down all the ingredients, the pupils then learnt more about the links to the people of different countries and learned the reward of tasting the cake they'd helped the chef to produce. They also explored the natural habitats recreated in the Eden Project's Mediterranean and rainforest biomes. The Eden trip aimed to support the school's wider curriculum, developing pupils' knowledge and understanding of the world, and encourage them to become confident, informed, and responsible global citizens. Liam O'Sullivan, the head teacher at Dunsford's Community Academy, said, "It was wonderful to see our pupils fully immersed in their learning at the Eden Project. Opportunities like this make geography real, engaging and memorable. And the children representing the school beautifully through the day worked as a team and showed excellent behaviour. The school is part of the Learning Academy Partnership, a trust comprising 18 schools serving communities around Devon, Cornwall and Torbay." Tracy Cleverly, trust lead, said, "A huge thank you to staff and the PTFA for creating such enriching learning experiences for pupils. Trips like this are a brilliant example of how schools can bring the curriculum to life and help children develop curiosity and confidence beyond the classrooms."
So that brings us to the end of our recording for this week, but just another reminder that we are looking forward to meeting as many of you as possible at the AGM on Wednesday the 17th. It's at 10:30 in the Strand Hall, Dawlish, and we would love to meet you if you could make it. Apart from that, if you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Lynn and Chris, and our producer is Mike. And as usual, copying and dispatching is a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye from us all here in the studio.
Goodbye. Goodbye.